I'm Molly Wansell.
And I'm Geoffrey Wansell.
And for the last 16 years or thereabouts, we have been having lunch every Saturday, and often our conversation turns to murder.
And that's what's prompted us to launch this true crime podcast called Blood Ties.
Hi everyone, welcome back to the Blood Ties podcast. I'm Molly Wansell and I'm here with my father, Geoffrey Wansell.
Hello everyone, welcome back. It's always a pleasure to be with you. Thank you for listening. We seem to get more and more listeners. It's very exciting. And we get lovely reactions from people. It's quite extraordinary.
We do, yeah.
Yeah, I got a lovely email this week from a man in Canada.
Did you?
Suggesting that a Canadian case, a famous Canadian case. And I'm almost astonished by how far and wide we seem to get listeners.
That is very exciting, isn't it?
It's amazing. Quite amazing. And really, really wonderful. I'm so glad we seem to get people to take part with us.
Yeah.
It's, well, how's your week been, Mo?
Yeah, you know, fine. Quite busy.
Yeah, you seem busy.
Mm-hmm.
I seem to have been running from pillar to post, I don't know. It just seems to be a lot at the minute. But that book I mentioned to you, which I'm going to give you here.
Which one? The Thursday one?
Yep.
Yeah.
The fastest selling book since J.K. Rowling's first Harry Potter.
Oh, wow. Yeah, someone messaged us saying they'd been reading it too.
Yeah.
He's very popular because that program he does, Pointless, is very popular.
Yes. But I do recommend the book.
I'm going to read the book.
Because it's got one of those rare things, a bit of wit amidst the crime. It's some laugh out loud lines as well.
Oh, wow.
And it's great. Set in a retirement community, and there are two murders, and these two ladies and two gentlemen, elderly of course, as they're all in the community, have set up a thing they call the Thursday Murder Club so that they can examine cold cases, and then they get two real new live ones, and it's very, very good.
I mean, that's a format that's going to run and run, isn't it?
Yes. Viking, who are the publishers, have already signed up books 2, 3 and 4.
Mm, wow. That's pretty impressive. How was your week then? Oh, you were just very busy running around.
Well, it's not so much running around. It's just these, sometimes the cases get to me. There's just so much of it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I sometimes just shake my head. No, I had to remind myself about the case we're doing today, and it's quite a long and complicated
one. We're doing it in two parts, in fact.
Yes, we are.
And just before we get into that, I would just like to remind all of you listeners that we are setting up a Patreon thing. I don't know the correct terminology. It's like a page and you can support us, and they're going to be like different tiers of membership, and you'll get special perks for what you choose to sign up for, and it's all very jolly.
But the most important thing, as I've said every time, is that if you just want to keep on listening, you just keep on listening. We're very pleased to have you.
Exactly. We're going to film a video for it today, aren't we, Dad?
We are.
Yeah.
Yes.
Geoffrey's looking very smart.
I dressed up specially.
I'll take a photo and put it on the Insta. I can't say it. I just look tired.
You don't look as tired as you have done. Sometimes you do look very tired.
I feel a bit tired. Anyway, yeah, so it's quite a long, complicated case today, so we're doing it in two parts.
And it's inspired by the fact that this coming week, ITV, the British broadcaster, is screening a three-part drama about the killer, Dennis Nielsen, who died in May 2018 at the age of 72.
Are we calling this just Dennis Nielsen Part 1 and Part 2?
I think so. The drama is called Dez and stars David Tennant as Nielsen. And Dez is the name that Nielsen was known by in prison after his arrest and conviction. But I'm going to do it in two parts. The first part broadly is up until the killings, and then the second part is the killings.
Okay. All right. Well, here we go with Dennis Nielsen Part 1.
Dennis Andrew Nielsen was born in Fraserburgh on the Aberdeenshire coast on the 23rd of November 1945.
Got the same birthday as me.
Yes, that's a bit creepy, isn't
creepy.
It?
Creepy.
Except you weren't born in 1945.
Well.
He was the second of three children to a Scottish mother and a man who was a Norwegian soldier who come over from the Norwegian soldiers appeared in Scotland during the battle for Norway, which waged for some considerable time. He had an elder brother called Olaf and a younger sister called Sylvia. The Norwegian soldier changed his surname to Nielsen.
Changed Des' surname or his, no, he, the soldier's
his surname. Surname. So Nielsen became known as Nielsen.
Yeah.
Pretty quickly, Nielsen's mother, Elizabeth, realised that this was a terrible mistake. The marriage was a terrible mistake. And that it was better to call it a day. And in fact, her parents supported her most profoundly during the breakup, because it was quite difficult. We're talking about a divorce in 1948.
Yeah, you wouldn't do that much back then, would
no,
you?
No, absolutely not. But in fact, her parents were extremely supportive and looked after the children, including Dennis. And Nielsen himself was a somewhat lonely child. His only person that he really took to was his grandfather. And his grandfather treated him with considerable respect. He used to take him for long walks along the shore. His grandfather was a fisherman. And, although it's not inevitable, I fear had a rather less than salubrious interest in the boy. And in fact, began to abuse him in what was then an unused pillbox on the coast.
I mean, that's not respectful, Dad.
No.
That was a weird relationship, wasn't it? Because it was like, he revered it. Well, I suppose abusive relationships are like that.
Yeah.
So he was kind to him, but obviously he had ulterior...
Yes, he was very kind to him. And in fact, his grandfather, apart from abusing him, and I don't think in some ways that was a terrible... It was... I think Nielsen himself saw it as some kind of love.
But so, I mean, it's wrong. But yeah.
You know, yes, but he saw it as some kind of love. And in fact, he thought that the only person who truly loved him was actually his grandfather, even though he was abusive. But then sadly, all of a sudden, in 1951, when he was six, his grandfather died at the age of 62 of a heart attack. And now comes another strand in Nielsen's story. His mother asked him if he'd like to see the dead body. It was a practice in Scotland in those days. I can remember as a boy being taken to see my dead aunt in the living room.
Really?
Oh, yes. You'd lay out
was
the body.
Was she in the coffin?
Yes, but it was an open coffin.
Mm.
And it was quite a well-known practice. And it was a way of honouring. And people used to come and visit to see the body. Not something we do now.
They still do it in some communities, though.
Yes, yes. But we are squeamish when it comes to death these days, unfortunately. His brother Olaf was popular, and Dennis rather envied him. He now didn't have his grandfather. His mother was a little remote. His sister probably didn't awfully care for him. He withdrew. He just withdrew into himself, you know. So we have this lonely, rather spindly boy, you know, not muscular, weak, and increasingly remote. But the next important point in his history as a child was at the age of nine, he almost drowned. In fact, he was only saved by another young man who was on the beach at the time. And it was a fundamental moment in his development. And indeed, he was to go on much later to write his autobiography called The History of a Drowning Man. drowning, and the concept of a lifeless body is a very important theme in the story of Dennis Nielsen. His mother married again, a builder called Andrew Scott. And believe it or not, she had another four children.
Another four?
Yes.
Lordy.
It was, well, the days of big families.
Mm.
You know, not weren't worried about the climate change then. It was big changes. But her second husband, Scott, was a bit fierce and a bit strict. And I don't think that went down very well with Nielsen either. And by the time he'd reached puberty, Nielsen had realised that he was gay, that he had no feelings towards girls at all.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, although it's not clear, that his brother Olaf suspected it. And he started calling him by the Scots nickname for a girl, which is Hen. So Nielsen was already removed from his brother, now even more so. He did everything he could. His brother did everything he could to belittle him. And it's another theme in the story of Nielsen. This is not, none of this is to excuse him or excuse his crimes, far from it. But it helps to paint a picture of the man we are going to come to know,
mm-hmm.
and who becomes one of Britain's most ferocious and repetitive serial killers. One of the things that Nielsen liked at school was the Army Cadet Force. In other words, you were a soldier. We had it at school too. When I was at school, I had it called the Combined Cadet Corps, or the Combined Cadet Force.
I think you could do it at my school. I can't remember.
Well, Nielsen really took to this. It was like he fitted in for the first time.
Well, you know, it's order and regiment and that kind of thing.
Yes, and yeah. He thought, oh, this is really good. So when he leaves school in 1961, he decides that he's going to join the army, which he absolutely did. I think it's important to remember that Nielsen had a very considerable life before we get to the killings. A very, quite strangely complicated life. Mm. Anyway, he joins the army and enlists for 9 years in September 1961.
In the just regular army?
Yes, he joined the Army Catering Corps, actually. He was did his basic training at Aldershot, and he became ever more aware of his gayness, surrounded by men in, you know, a barrack room. He began drinking heavily. One of the things, the other qualities in this story, is Nielsen's love of alcohol, and it's an important part. He was posted to Osnabrück in Germany for 2 years with the army, and then back to Aldershot, and then he was posted to Aden, where he saw quite a lot of activity, really. I mean, people died. It was the time of the Aden revolts, and he saw a number of his colleagues killed. He didn't fight, but he was aware of it. But basically, he was a cook. And one of the many skills that he learnt at the army, with the army, was butchery. He learnt how to butcher a body.
Well, I mean, hopefully they weren't training the chefs on bodies.
No, they were training them on lambs.
Animals.
And sheep, mutton and beef.
But that will come to be significant later, I imagine.
It will indeed. And while he's going about, he's actually quite a good cook, apparently. You know,
I'm sure it would be if he'd been doing it for that long.
Good reputation. Used to cook for a platoon and two officers, and that it was his responsibility to do all the meals, the menus, and all that.
Mm-hmm.
He was, in his own way, rather popular. Yes, a little reserved. That's true, and he had a series of gay affairs with an Arab in Aden. But he began to develop a fantasy, a very, very powerful fantasy of having sex with a lifeless body. It's said, and again, it's very difficult to be absolutely sure, and Nielsen himself never, I don't think, confirmed it, although I'm still trying to discover whether it's true, that it was partly inspired by a French romantic painting, a 19th century French romantic painting called The Raft of Medusa, in which an old man holds the body of a limp young man who is dead, and he's sitting on the body of a dismembered youth. If you can actually Google it.
Mm-hmm. I'm not going to. But no, it's feel fine. Free, listeners.
No, okay. It went back from Aden to Plymouth, then he went to Berlin, where he had his first and only heterosexual experience with a woman, which he described later as depressing and overrated. I leave you to make of what you will of that, listeners. But in 1972, after 11 years, he left the army as a corporal. He'd been promoted.
Mm.
Private, lance corporal, corporal. Never made it to the sergeant's mess, but never mind. He was quite happy where he was. So he went back, believe it or not, to Scotland to work out what to do next. He spent a few months there and then decided that he wanted another regimented background. So this time, he decides to join the Metropolitan Police as a constable. He does his basic training. And by April 73, he's been posted to Willesden Green Police Station. He liked it. He quite liked it. But he missed the camaraderie of the army. And it was also fair to say that Willesden Green, indeed many Metropolitan Police Stations in those days, had a fairly strong misogynist tendency, and they didn't care for women and didn't much care for gays. So I think he felt uncomfortable quite quickly. He never got involved in anything dramatic. You know, there was no great robbery that he interrupted or anything. He was just an ordinary constable going about doing ordinary things.
Mm-hmm.
And but he started to he started frequenting gay pubs and engaging in one-night stands. Wasn't difficult to do in the 70s. There were a lot of gay pubs in London at those days. We've talked about a number of them in Earl's Court, and particularly the Colhern. There's the pubs in Old Compton Street in Soho.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't complicated. And there were a lot of fairly rootless young men. But even he found that, what he later to describe as soul-destroying, and he says he was in vain search of inner peace. Now, this kind of, what you might describe as pseudo-intellectualism, is another part of Nielsen's character. He was actually quite a bright man, but he liked to rather overdo it. He would, you know, try and make things more complicated than they really were. And I think, in a way, it was his way of making himself feel a bit better, a bit cleverer, a bit more part of the world. Never mind. So by August 73, he's decided, this is only after a matter of 5 or 6 months, that perhaps the juxtaposition between his private life and his personal and his professional life was too great. And he designs in December 1973 to resign from the police force.
It wasn't illegal to be homosexual then, still, was it?
No, the law changed in 68. It wasn't illegal. Although it was still much frowned upon.
Hmm.
And a lot of gay men, as we both know, didn't want to come out at all. The concept of coming out was literally inconceivable. But that, I think the anti-gay atmosphere at Willesden Green did, in a way, get to him. So from 73 into May 74, he worked as a security guard. And then he joined the civil service as a clerk and went to work in the job centre in Denmark Street, very near where your old office was.
Yeah.
And where Cormoran Strike theoretically has his offices in Robert Galbraith's books about the private detective with a prosthetic leg. He was quiet. He was conscientious, a good worker, but was known to be a bit occasional. He would sometimes disappear for a bit. But nevertheless, he was promoted eventually. Just one rung from a clerical officer to an executive officer, but that's the leap ahead a bit. In November 1975, he met a man called David Galishan, who was 20. He was 30. They thought it was love, and indeed they moved in together to a flat in Cricklewood, 195 Melrose Avenue. The trouble was they didn't really fancy each other very much, and they didn't. It was a very odd sort of relationship. And they both started having casual affairs, and you know, the two-bedroom flat got a bit. And finally, I mean, I think at that point, Nielsen convinced himself that perhaps it was love with David. So you have this, David leaves, and by the end of 1978, you have this, a job centre clerk, mostly looking for work for unskilled labourers, impossibly lonely, a complete fantasy life of his own around this concept of sex with a lifeless body. And so you have this breeding ground for what was to become a relentless trail of murder. Now, there was no specific trigger that I can see. You've had this failed affair with David. He's on his own. He's drinking heavily. He's going to the local pub.
He's still in the two-bedroom flat in Cricklewood.
He's still in 195 Melrose Avenue, which comes to play a big part in this story.
For listeners who don't live in London, Cricklewood's in North London.
Yes, it's... funnily enough, I went to school there.
It's sort of suburban-ish, not so much now.
No, not
but
that.
Then maybe
yeah, a bit more. Yeah. It had a little bit of a garden.
Not too far from Central.
No. It had a bit of a garden, and it had a little sort of fence at the back, and there was a bit of open space behind it.
It was like a typical London terraced house that had been converted into flats.
Exactly. Yeah. 195 Melrose Avenue. Yeah. Now, there's no trigger that I can see in this. Nielsen hadn't, yes, he'd been fiddled about with by his grandfather, but he didn't demonstrate any of the other serial killer characteristics like harming furry animals or arson or...
Dropped on his head.
Or being dropped on his head. He, but something or other sparked in Nielsen a desire to kill.
Maybe it was a collective thing, you know. Sometimes a trigger can be...
Yes, cumulative.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's important to remember that between December 1978 and January 1983, he killed 12 men and boys and attempted to murder 7 others. They were mainly homeless. They were mainly gay. And he picked them up in pubs. Often gay pubs, but not exclusively. And he killed them all personally. Before we get on to the killings, which is the second part of this broadcast, I think we should perhaps try and do something a little cheerful, because believe me, second part is quite ugly.
Okay, well, thanks so much. That was Dennis Nielsen part one, just setting it all up for you, and you have to wait a whole week to hear about the killings. But that's, you know, maybe a break before the gruesomeness is a good thing. And as Dad says, we'll say maybe if we can talk about something a bit jolly before we finish.
I think that's great. Yes, I.
Have you been watching anything, or have you been too busy just doing all murder prep?
I seem to have just been doing a lot of murder prep. I haven't had a chance to read the new James Lee Burke, one of my favourite authors. A new book of his just coming out called A Private Cathedral. It once again features the wonderful Dave Robichaux, a detective, and his friend Cleet Purcell. It's I'm saving it up as a treat.
Oh, nice. When you finish your
When I've stopped
murder.
Doing all this, quite so much murder.
Did I tell you that I started watching ER from the beginning?
Yes, you did.
Yeah.
Well, you've got...
Well, it's been brilliant, but then I got busy and I had to do other things. And also my internet's been on the fritz. But it's been great getting back in with my old chums.
Oh, yeah. Well, Clooney and Andrew, what's it, Alan?
Anthony Edwards.
Anthony Edwards, that's right. Anthony Edwards.
No, Wiley, who was just my absolute major crush when I was young.
Yes, you did.
Dr. Carter.
Oh, dear. Yes, oh. Dr. Carter. Oh, my word.
Yeah. It's great. I love it.
Yeah, so I haven't started watching that again yet. I did complete the second series of Mindhunter. I still think the man who plays Son of Sam, Berkowitz, is terrific too. And the man who plays Manson is very good.
Yeah, yeah. One of them is one of our clients, I think. I can't remember which one he... person he
played. It just reminded me how good it was.
So good.
Yeah. This is my second time through, and I really appreciated it even more.
One of our favourites.
Yeah. I watched all of The Fall.
Oh, did you? Because it's come onto Netflix. You didn't watch it when it came out.
No.
Do you like it?
You quite like it. I thought she was quite good.
Gillian Anderson.
Mm.
I love her.
Yeah.
She can do no wrong in my eyes.
And I quite like the man playing the killer.
Jamie Dornan,
yeah.
Yeah. He was a model.
Hmm.
And then he became an actor.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Crikes.
I used to have a picture of him on my wall when I was at school.
Did you,
modelling for Dior. Then he dated Keira Knightley.
Did he, Bajer?
And they were a sort of like hot 90s couple. And then he turned his hand to acting and did that, and everyone was like, Jamie Dornan's a revelation. Well, he's so handsome.
The things I learn, Mo, every day on this podcast.
I know, Dad. I'm a fount of really useful knowledge.
You are. That's another brilliant piece of information. Yeah. I never have before.
I know. You wish you'd always known that Jamie Dornan was a model and is now an actor.
An actor, yeah. With a beard. At least in The Fall, he's got a beard.
Yeah. I mean, he tends to get cast in the kind of quiet, broody... Yeah. He's the 50 Shades of Grey man.
Is he?
He is Christian Grey.
Oh, right.
Which has obviously catapulted him into...
Oh, I'm afraid I never saw that.
Millions
didn't read
of
it
dollars. I don't think you're the target audience.
No,
for
I'm
it.
Not. I'm not. What, a very old age pensioner like me.
Well, I think if you were a lady, it might be different. All ages.
Oh.
You might enjoy watching the film The Book Club that I watched on Netflix, which is about, it's got a really good cast. It's like Diane Keaton, Jane Fonda, these two other amazing women, and they have a book club and they read 50 Shades of Grey, and it turns all their lives upside down.
Changes their lives. Oh my goodness.
I mean, it's very naff, but I love it because it's got, I love anything with, hold on, let me find out the other ladies, because Mum was telling me that, oh yeah, Candice Bergen, she said that she was amazing when she was younger. Diane Keaton, Jane Fonda, Candice Bergen and Mary Steenburgen.
Oh, a great cast.
I know, right?
Great.
It's good fun.
I'll have a look. The Book Club.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's Diana friendly.
Okay. Well, that's important. That's an important quality.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. I'll just say thank you to all the people who always help us out. To our producer Sam Brain, who's been working hard helping us.
Yes, thank you, Sam, very much for all your hard work.
To my brother Dan, who did the music, my friend George, who drew our caricature, to Audio Boom for hosting us, to you, Jeffrey, as ever, and to the listeners, thank you all so much.
Thank you.
Without you.
Thank you so much for listening. Without you, well, we wouldn't be here. It means a great deal to us, and as I hope is clear, and as I say every week, do be careful out there.